right, welcome everyone to our weekly call. Just ask those that are on Skype via the internet, mute yourself out, ask your questions via the net so we can keep the quality good because a lot of people are doing it via replay. Of course, our announcement site, if I miss a plane or something happens or we need to find recordings, ask a question, is at ywhypersuasion.com. And this is the weekly call where I take questions. Oh, sounds like there's a little echo there. Hold on. All right, sounds like we got it. So, take questions. We'll talk anything from, well, it could be influence, which could be negotiation, it could be persuasion, it could be mindset or self-persuasion, it could be sales skills, it could be any of the above, because it all has to do with influence. You want to double your income? You double your influence skills. Comes down to that. And that's what we need to talk about as we get into the call. So we'll spend 15, 20 minutes together talking about a concept. We'll talk application. We'll talk homework. Then, of course, we will let you go and take questions. Now, let me give you a term. It's called fundamental attribution error. Fundamental attribution error. This is important to understand. It's been a long time if you're around to ever studied psychology at all. Let me get that right. Basically, what it says is that what we attribute to people is mostly an error, and this is what they're doing to you. But let's take an example. You're at the grocery store, long line, and this person just casually strolls up and cuts in a line. Was it a mistake? Because we've probably all done that by accident before. Or was it on purpose? Well, this error states that most people say, bad person, what are you thinking? They did it on purpose. They're out to get me, right? That's the fundamental attribution error. Somebody cuts you off. Probably was an accident. I mean, people really don't do that on purpose. I mean, some do, but percentage-wise, no. But when someone cuts you off, it was on purpose. How dare they? They're out to get me. They think they're better than me. When that probably wasn't the issue. A telemarketer calls you. They could be a great person, a great product, a great company, but the fundamental attribution errors are probably evil or slimy or distrustful. How could they do that? Now, why do I bring this up? Because even though you're a good person, even though you're a trustworthy person, even though you're a likable person, even though you have a great product or service, the error is going to be when they first time meet you, they're looking for ways not to trust you. They're looking for reasons why your product could work. They're going to go to the exact opposite, just like we do in everyday situations. So we need to work on a few things that will help you out in this arena to help rebuild what you are doing. So what happens? What are we supposed to do when that happens? Well, first of all, you have to realize that it's happening. Just because you're a trustworthy person doesn't mean that they trust you. So what I'm saying is, what can we do to slowly chunk that down to build that trust, that confidence, that credibility? What can we do? Because we need to understand exactly how this works. So let me give you a few tools to help you out, especially if you're cold calling, especially if you're in an industry where there's not a lot of trust. That would be one. So let me help you out with a few of these. Each one you add is going to help you out. Again, this is a process here where we're slowly melting their skepticism, slowly getting away from their attribution error. The first one is building trust. You got to build trust. And the number one thing with trust is you have to come across as competent. Can you solve their problem? Now, character is important, obviously, but so is competence. You're not going to fly with a pilot that has great character but no competence. I mean, this is just reality. And competence is not reality. It's a perception. You've probably flown with some very bad pilots, but they've seemed like good pilots. And so if you can build that trust, show them that competence, that'll help you out. That'll slowly get them to see it. Because when you're accepted as the expert, okay, so you are competent, you are the expert, we believe you, we trust you. Think about doctors, dentists, lawyers, right? Think about those things. Are you with me? So we're thinking about those because we believe them. A doctor says we need to take a pill, we do it. Lawyer says we need to do this, we do it because of that competence. And that is something that you can build with your competence, the way you come across, the way you dress, the way you act, the external things in your office, your voice over the phone, your inflection, your tonality. Do you inflect down at the end of the sentence? Those are all things that you can add to what you are doing. So that's one. There's five C's of trust, but that's the most one we're going to talk about today. The second one, if you're not building the trust, you're not coming across as the expert, we need to do a little social validation. It's one of the 12 laws of persuasion, just meaning that we need to start borrowing some credibility. We do that through endorsements. We do that through testimonials. We do that through referrals. We do that through industry experts. Any one of those will make a big difference. Any one of those will give you credibility because they will always believe somebody else sooner, faster, quicker than they're going to believe you. It's just reality. Doesn't matter if these things are fair. We have to deal with reality. So borrow that credibility. The social validation is the number one. It's the best selling. Anything that you could do to borrow credibility is important. Just like a restaurant. First one in the restaurant, they're going to put you right by the door, right by the window. That gives it social validation. Yelp gives restaurants and other things social validation. If it's good for 20 reviews, it must be a good place. It could be all fabricated, but it's good for that restaurant and for the consumer who wants to go there. So we can spend a while on the social validation and testimonials, but it's important. You got to borrow that credibility. I did that when my very first book came out. First-time author, not a lot of credibility. So I made sure I had Stephen Covey and Robert Allen and Nothing Down and Mark Victor Hansen of Chicken Soup for the Soul on the back to borrow their credibility. They endorse it, must be good. And that's what you're looking for. Not always possible, that's what you are looking for. So write that one down. Next one is vision. What does that mean? If they can't see themselves doing what you're asking them to do, they won't do it. They will say it's too expensive, can't afford it, come back later, talk to a spouse. Any of those, they won't do it. So you have to paint a picture of them doing what you're asking them to do. For example, you were selling an annual pass to a water park, no-brainer, really inexpensive. And they're saying, well, it's too expensive, I don't have the time, and it's just a complete no-brainer. Maybe they can't see themselves doing it. They can't see themselves in a swimsuit. They can't see themselves in the water. Maybe there's a fear of the water. You haven't built the vision. You haven't said, if it's a home-based business, they can't see themselves talking to other people. If it's a gym, they can't really see themselves working out with other people. That's what we're looking for. If it's a foreclosure, maybe they can't see the bank kicking them out. And it's a reality, and you need to be able to handle that. So that would be one. So, of course, vision is going to be important here to build that vision and let them see, taste, touch, feel what you are doing. All right. Hope you're taking notes here. Next one I want you to write down is esteem. Law of esteem. Got that? So that's one way that you could do this. What does that mean? Well, if you have to understand that when you bruise somebody's ego, you back them into a corner, you show them they're wrong, the doors of persuasion swing close. It's how it is. It's fun to win an argument. It's fun. It really is. It's fun to show people that you are right and they're wrong, but that doesn't make you a great persuader, because you have to help them persuade themselves, little bit at a time. And that's what we're talking about here. So you, if you could boost their esteem, it could be a compliment, it could be praise, it could be just go and let them persuade you on a few items. And that, by the way, is called reciprocal concessions, if you want to know the scientific term. Basically, when you let them persuade, when you let them persuade you on a few points, they're easy to persuade down the road. So if you, anything you can do to compliment them, to list their story, or on the opposite, don't top their fishing story, don't tell them they're wrong, don't tell them I made a dumb decision a while back, don't tell them how could you get yourself into this situation. Now, if they're in a depression state, that might be okay to do. Because when people are depressed, there's very little deception. They're going to tell you how it is, and they know it's their fault for the most part. So the boost esteem. If you want more information on that, I guess I got a note here. That would be the magnetic persuasion, and that's 12 laws of persuasion, both for esteem and social validation. Okay, another question coming in. Kurt, you mentioned trust. Is competence or character more important? Wow. The way I see it, the way I chuckle, is that's a tough question, first of all. You know, we all think you have to have a good character. You have to be a good person. And confidence is important, is underneath that. That's how I feel. But the reality is the marketplace is character is secondary. You've got to be competent. You might have the lawyer that's the most competent in the state but has bad character. You might still go with them just because of the competence side. You know they're good. You know they're going to win your case. So there's the reality side, and then there's probably the truth, which is competence is going to trump it every time. Every time. All right, last one we need to talk about, and then we'll open up for questions, is write down FITD. FITD. Okay, FITD. So this is the one of the five things that you can do to make sure that you don't get stuck with that. Remember, we talked about the fundamental attribution error. All right, here we go. Now, FITD is short for foot in the door. Foot in the door. So as I'm trying to build trust, as I'm trying to get them to do things, you have to realize that asking someone to buy a car is a big thing. I need a FITD. So I need a list. Okay, just come by the dealership. Okay, come by the dealership and get a free gift. Hey, come by the dealership, get a free gift, and look at a car. Hey, come by the dealership, get a free gift, look at the car, and take it for a test drive. Hey, why don't you test drive? Well, after you test drive, why don't you just come by and see what your options are? Those little steps are more persuasive than asking for the big thing. So something important to think here, that if you ask a prospect to do something and they keep getting no, is what you're asking is too big. It's too big what you're asking. And so you need to break it down into smaller yeses and redo it. Here's the example. And this is a psychology example. This was done at a university. So they go to students, and this should open your eyes. Because, again, if you're getting too many no's, we need to turn that around and get smaller yeses. So they go to students, the psychology students, and say, hey, will you participate on a study, sensory perception study, Saturday at 7 a.m.? Okay? Well, pretty simple, and it was a small amount, about 26%. Okay? So that wasn't very good. So this is how they changed it around to more than double the yeses. Hey, we're doing a study on sensory perception. Hey, will you help us out? Will you participate? Well, yeah. It's on Saturday. Are you available? Yeah. It's at 7 a.m. Will you be there? Yeah. Went up 30 points to 56%. Asking the same question, but smaller pieces, smaller yeses. So open your eyes here. This is very, very important to understand. If you're getting no, if you're getting resistance, break it down to smaller yeses. If you want someone to go to the mall, don't ask them to go to the mall. Maybe it's just turn off the TV. Just come here, do me a favor. Just put on your shoes. Hey, will you do this? That is easier to handle mentally than the whole big thing of, oh, going to the mall, because that attribution error is also, we think it's going to be much harder than it actually is, much bigger than it actually is. And if you want to talk about self-persuasion, this is also true with exercise. I mean, the science of exercise is pretty simple. The further away from your bedroom the exercise machine is, it dramatically reduces the chances you're going to use it. Okay? It might not look good there, but that's how it is. So if you can make it easy that right when you get out of bed, you put on your exercise clothes, whether you're going to exercise or not, and you're going to walk by the exercise machine, whether you're going to exercise or not, and we can break it down to 3, 4, 5 steps, then it's much easier and people will do it. We know when they get up in the morning and put on their exercise equipment, we know that if they're going to report to somebody, we know that if the exercise equipment is close, that, man, it goes up dramatically the number of people that actually exercise. And that's break it down to smaller pieces. So you have to understand persuasion, small, manageable, bite-sized pieces, because when the brain gets overwhelmed, when you're talking about too much, too big, or that your commitment's too big, it's too much for a brain. Too much for a brain. And we understand that you break it down to smaller, manageable, bite-sized pieces. That is what you can do. So we talked about these different aspects here. Remember, we talked about, someone has asked me a question here to review what the fundamental attribution error. It's basically our tendency to overvalue our explanations. If you're writing it down, they're explanations of observed behavior. Okay, you want, that's the scientific version. Let me kind of explain that. Remember, example in the beginning, we just said that we automatically assume the worst. This is what people are doing to you. Let me see if I can think of a different example. That, I don't know, that one's coming to mind, but the one I used earlier was someone cuts in line at, say, a movie theater. And to you, it's obvious. We automatically assume they're a bad person. They don't care. They're a bad member of the human race. They're dishonest. They're evil. Maybe their friend was there. Maybe they didn't realize that there was a line. Maybe they thought the line opened up. They didn't realize the line was. But we always assume that. And rarely do we make the right decision here. And this is what people are doing to you. So we went over those five areas. Somebody asked me here to quickly review those, and I will do that. So we talked about when people see you and they're very distrusting and very negative, this is what they're doing to you. So what we're doing is we're slowly, I don't say sculpting, but eroding away and building that trust and getting past it. So the first one we talked about, trust and building competence, and that when you're the expert, there's little persuasion resistance. Okay? The second one we talked about is social validation. Okay, they don't trust you. Let's borrow it. Referral, testimonial, endorsement, industry expert would be the ability to do that. Third one is to build the vision. If they can't see themselves doing business with you or using your product or service, it's not going to matter. So you paint the picture. One of the best ways to do this, and this is a whole other session, is your ability to tell stories. Stories persuade without detection. Fourth one we talked about is esteem. Build up their esteem. Because when you bruise an ego, have a better story, win the argument, they're going to resist you. So let them persuade you on a few minor points, praise, compliment. Maybe you're not into praising a compliment. It works out very well when it's done right, but at least don't bruise the ego by showing that they're wrong, that they made a bad decision, because that will backfire on you. And the fifth one we talked about is FITD, or foot in the door. Get as many yeses as possible. Now, a note here. Someone just asked me about how many yeses you should get. I guess it depends on the length of your presentation. You can even get someone to raise their hand, to shake their head yes, to say yes mentally, verbally. I'll just say it this way. In a persuasive presentation, you never want to get a no. It's always yes, 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 especially when you're getting to the point where you're going through the persuasion cycle. maybe a few no's in the beginning, okay, but just try to always get the yes. So small, manageable pieces. Remember the point here, if you're getting too many no's, break that down into smaller questions, smaller yeses, and you'll see dramatic change in what you are doing. All right, that's our call for today. Let's ask questions about either via the net. For those on Skype that are mute, go ahead and answer those through the net, or you can ask those via the phone. Questions that you have. One here about, Kurt, you said stories persuade without detection. Can you explain? Yes, I can. People are so resistant now that we're seeing a lot more in marketing to where we have to prove ourselves, we have to give things away, we have to let people know about our value. And when you tell somebody that you are good or you're honest, they're going to resist you. So if I want to let people know that I was honest, let's say, for example, and I told people, you know, I'm an honest guy, automatically, because of the attribution error, they're going to say, yeah, right, whatever. But I told a story about chopping down the cherry tree and being honest. They're gonna take that trait and attribute it to me. Now, that's probably not the best example, but that's something that's important. Here's a better example. So I'm selling life insurance, and they want to put it off. There's the story. The person that put it off, family with two children, accident happened, they forgot about it. Now all of a sudden they put themselves in that story. Because it persuades emotionally. We don't have our resistance up. We put ourselves in the story. That's how it persuades without detection. So that's what I meant by that. And that helps really build the vision because they can see that someone's doing it. And when I studied charisma, you look at charismatic, influential people, they are great storytellers. I'm not talking about length. It doesn't have to be a lot of description, but great stories. Because when I interview people after you've tried to persuade them, what happens is they say things like, it was like listening to a movie, it was like watching a movie, to where they sat there in a trance because they didn't have to think about it. That's why emotions tend to be more persuasive than logic. Logic, I got to process it in a statistic and a number. And granted, it's important. You need that in a presentation. But a story, I'm like, whew. First of all, it grabs my attention. And second of all, Mike, story, Mike Squirrel, if you've ever seen the movie Up, story, and you're just listening in, and that goes a long way. Any other questions? Ms. Kirk, can you repeat the list again? You bet. Trust, social validation. I don't know which one you missed here, but is it trust, social validation, vision, esteem? And FITD, or foot in the door. Those are the ones. Any other questions? All right, got one. Let me read this here real fast. Kurt, where can I learn more about fundamental attribution error? You know, it's also called correspondence bias. You know, you can Google that and find the hardcore social psychology if you really wanted to go into the studies. The term goes back to, if you want to really get into it, Lee Ross, R-O-S-S, and, you know, they coined that if you want to go into that. But the main thing to realize here is that it's happening to you even though you don't deserve it. Any other questions? There's one that occurred on social validation. They ask, if they don't have testimonials, they're new in the business, they don't have referrals or endorsements, what can they do for social validation? Hopefully there's other people in that industry that are very successful that you can name drop. We see that quite a bit in a home-based business, and when people just starting off, they can name drop other people or have them talk to other people that are successful in that business, so they can talk to success stories. That would be something that they could do. If somehow you can say this product is number one, the best-selling, the biggest in the north, south, east, west of our city, It is number one in this time zone. It was the number New York Times best-selling book. It is number one here. Voted the best Italian restaurant in Southern California. If you could start doing something like that, that would also be a way to do that. That would definitely work too. Okay, good question. Any other questions? All right, good deal. So again, that's the fundamental attribution error. I guess we're using big words today, but I think we broke it down into ways that you can understand that. So the recording or any questions you want to post will be at ywhypersuasion.com. Give them 24 hours to post that, and we'll post it on there for you. And that's always a place to go if for some reason I get stuck at a plane and can't get on the call or something happens, or we'll always post a recording or something in there for you. But with that, why don't you go out there and persuade with power, and then you can go out and make the world a better place. That's all we want. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to Replay. Thanks for Skyping us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Of cells in it. For example, a fruit fly has 100,000 brain cells, a mouse 5 million, and a monkey 10 billion. Humans have 20 billion brain cells.